Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Tuesday night meeting of Overeaters Anonymous. My name is Clementina, and I am a compulsive overeater and your leader for this evening. Everybody, it is my wonderful honor and pleasure to welcome somebody who's a very dear darling to me and somebody I met 2 years ago in this lovely program. So thank you for joining us. Take it away. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me, you guys. Quarantina, I'm just so honored that you asked me to share, and I'm happy to. So I am Sophia. Like I said, I joined this program a little over 2 years ago. And I am a compulsive overeater, recovering and healing my relationship with food one day at a time. And I like to word it like that because I think it is a relationship with food. I think food means many things to people in this program, and I know it does to me. So tonight I want to give you a glimpse into kind of what brought me to OA, my journey during OA, and share some of the tools that have helped me transform my life, really. This program, what's the word I want to use? This program has really been a vessel for miracles. And I just want to share a little bit about those as well. So thank you so much again for having me. And I'll start. I think I've said that already. And this is also the first time learning my story. So please bear with me. I will try to keep it concise, and then I do have some pictures that I'd like to share about the time. So a little bit about me. Like 2 years ago, after the pandemic hit, like many of us, I did a good look at my life and where I was going, and I decided that life was worth living and that there had to be a better way to relate to food and to people in my life. So I'll talk a little bit about my family of origin. My nationality, my background is Italian. So growing up, my family was very passionate about food. My grandma cooked all the time. We were always in the kitchen, whether it was to celebrate a birthday or a graduation, or to grieve over, you know, losses in our lives. Everything revolved around food. And that's, you know, that's a societal expectation. We eat to feel emotions, but my family took it to another level. And I learned early on that food not only tasted good, but it felt good. It was a comfort to me. I started to develop my eating disorder when I was about 5 years old. It's been a long time in the works. And so I think really what helped me to rely on food, or what kind of started me down this path, was when I was about 5 years old. Before this event at five, my life was pretty good. I have a big family, a lot of love. I have an older brother who's a musician, and we had the best time. Our family was full of love. I had a very simple life. When I was five, my mom got pregnant with her third child. And shortly after, the baby passed away. So I had my little sister that passed away when I was five. And I remember that specific day that my mom came home without the baby, that things shifted. There was a huge shift in her personality. We were all grieving in our own way. But our way of handling grief in my family was to go on a vacation. We didn't talk about it. We didn't process it. We started cooking. People would bring food to the house. left and right. I swear I've never eaten better. And I remember feeling so intensely lost at that time. And like, I didn't really know what had really, I didn't understand the magnitude of what had happened. I was five. So, you know, that I want to give myself a bit of grace, but I experienced a very life-altering circumstance, and it was unfortunate. And so with that, I learned that food brought comfort. And so I would eat. And shortly after I entered school, I spent better part of kindergarten through fifth grade being bullied. I really didn't have a lot of friends in school, and I was definitely that odd one out. I really struggled in school. And so food became my friend. I mean, my brother would, on my bad days, my brother would used to work in the little milk room that we have, or a student store. And if I would have a bad day or something happened at school, I would go and see my brother, and he would give me like little ice cream sandwiches or little treats, something to just get me through the day. And so again, I ingrained those programs, were ingrained that food helps, food is comfort. So I obliged, I got through, I pushed down everything that I was going through, because I knew that at home, I could not talk about what I was feeling. I would bring up different things or different emotions, and my mom would ask me, for example, with school, with the bullying, I would go home crying, and, you know, I was maybe second or third grade at this point. And my mom would say, well, what did you do to make them treat you like that? So I started internalizing tapes that my feelings and my stories, just who I was just not okay and not acceptable. And so I had to hide, and I had to shut down who I was. And there's another part of that that I will get to a little bit later on. But I knew how, I learned how to put on a mask, and I learned how to be the type of girl that they needed me to be. I learned how to behave. I was quiet and not seen. I was obedient. I had to be obedient because that's the only way that I could stay safe. So along, you know, my life, I've learned certain programs and certain tapes that told me that food is all there was. So Ed became my best friend. But there also comes a point in your life and in your eating disorder journey where you can no longer deny that there is a problem. And for me, that happened about 2008. So fast forward. In 2008, I was working as a preschool teacher in Southern California, and my babies were my everything. My goal as a teacher was to give these kids what I never had. So I embraced all kinds of emotions with them. They could tell me anything they wanted to. They could have tantrums. And at the end of their tantrums, they would just look up at me. And I would ask them simply, are you done now? Has it passed? And it gave them, what that shows them is that, okay, I can have my emotion and it's okay. We don't need to, you know, showing emotion and crying is not going to get them in trouble. They can express their feelings with me. So we learned together that emotions are okay, and that it doesn't make you broken if you need to cry, or if you're feeling sad about something, it's okay to cry. And then we move on from that. We don't need to stay in that trauma. So at this point, I was in the height of my eating disorder. In 2008, my best friend died by suicide. And I knew what to do, right? I knew that I had to eat. So I leaned into my eating disorder, and I was getting through. So the point at which for me, there was no coming back, no denying, was when we had a health inspection. So at that time, the teacher-student ratio was one teacher to 12 students. And my coworker and I had 27 students in our care at one time. And it was during their nap time. So it was fine. We could have a little bit over because everybody was asleep. But I had decided that I needed to go and get some mac and cheese, or I don't know, can I name foods? I'm sorry. Two of my binge foods that just hit it for me. Like that was all I needed. Right. So, and I needed to go and get money out of my car, but I realized I didn't have any money. So while the health department was walking around my school, I left my coworker by herself with 27 children. Okay. Knowing that at any point the health department could have just walked in and we could have gotten a huge fine, et cetera. I didn't care about the consequences. I left her by herself. I went to go and track down our handyman or our custodian, and I borrowed a power drill because I remembered that in my car, there used to be in the side panel, a little hole where change would fall into the car, the door frame. So I went and I took a power screwdriver. I unscrewed the door frame of my car to pull it back and have I think $2 came out of there in change. So I could go into the vending machine and get my food, go warm it up. I made it back to the classroom with, I think, 30 seconds to spare when I got back in. And I realized at that point, like, I did not care what the consequences were. Ed had to win. And so I started really realizing, okay, I need help. This is not okay. And I still didn't get help, though. That's just when I realized that there was a problem. And I didn't get into OA until, I think, 2020. So from there, I started going to outside therapy. I worked with a therapist for about 5 years after that point and really dove into the loss that I was experiencing, some old family traumas, and then some personal traumas that my family was not aware of. I was really, really good in my eating disorder at keeping secrets. I had to lie as a child to survive. I had to deny and suppress my truth so that I can survive. So moving forward, I kind of want to talk about some of the things that have helped me once I came to the program. Actually, let me back up a little bit. So through my work with my eating disorder therapist, I learned that I had some coping skills other than food to get through crisis. And one of those things, one of the biggest things I learned is art. She had me draw out some of my emotions because my history was so suppressed, I didn't really have the words to talk about what happened to me or my story. So I started to paint and I started to let my soul speak through my art rather than my words. And I realized how powerful art was. And, you know, it was really amazing to see what my soul wanted to say. And, you know, week by week, we would do different projects and it became a way for me to cope in addition to the food at that time. So the food kind of let up a little bit for me. And let's see, we talked about the art. The other thing I came to realize, I was really lucky actually, throughout this time until about 2018. I really was lucky in that I didn't experience very many health complications from my eating disorder. I was a binger, restrictor, and restricting bulimic for a long time, and it wreaked havoc on my body. But I was lucky enough to not have too many issues. So I focused on my art, and I focused on being the person for my children or for my students that I needed. And so we started to work with my inner child. I did a lot of inner child work and a lot of reparenting because I have a lot of abandonment issues as well. And it's been a journey for me. I've learned about all kinds of different aspects of myself that I'm not proud of. And I learned to have compassion for the parts of me that are still healing and still growing. So fast forward to OA, I want to spend the rest of my time focusing on the tools and the miracles that I've received from OA, because I think that's what's important. My recovery is not perfect. I've had ups and downs in abstinence, but starting August 14th of this year, I've had honest abstinence. And we'll talk about my abstinence plan a very little bit as well. So a couple of the tools that I used or that have helped me or that I'm learning to continue to use and rely on are, number one, my sponsor. I've had two different sponsors at this point, and I'm realizing that different styles don't work for me. And I'm so grateful, so grateful that God has showed me who my sponsor is, who he would like me to work with. I'm working with the most amazing sponsor who keeps me in it and doesn't let me go too far in the future. The first I had, so I'll show you an example. My very first sponsor, I chose her because of who she was, what she looked like, the things that she was into. She had a great recovery, but I wanted to be her. I wanted to be cool like her. I wanted to emulate who she was as a person. And she required a lot of work of me, and I was not ready for that type of work. I was not ready at the time to be honest about my food. And so it didn't quite work out. And then I got a sponsor who was open to everything and really honest about everything. And that was beautiful, but she also required me to do a lot of 10 steps. And I realized that every time I would talk about something tough or when something difficult would happen, that she would listen to me, but then she would be, you know, she would be quick to say, well, what was your part? What could you have done different? And, you know, this works as an adult if I'm engaging in a relationship or if I'm doing things, but as a child, I didn't do anything to deserve some of the things that I went through. I had no responsibility as a child. What I'm learning with my sponsor now is that, yes, I went through some really hard things and I've survived those things. And I have the ability to take those situations and to use them for my recovery. And where I have responsibility is now. Right? I didn't know what I didn't know before. Now I know that I can use those situations for good. And I can let go and let God do what he's going to do. Or let I call my higher power God. So I like to talk. So sponsorship is really important. I got my higher power actually told me that my sponsor now was going to be my sponsor 2 years ago. My sponsor is actually the first person that I heard talk in OA when I came into this program. And I'm grateful that I have her now, because I think I needed to grow in order to be open to receiving what she had for me. So sponsorship is important, but one of the tools that we're using together is the tool of writing and journaling. She has me journal every single day on different topics and different prompts. And it's been really, really powerful to open that channel up to what my higher power wants me to hear. The way that I use it is I'll read a piece from maybe for today and I'll write on that. And she actually, my sponsor, sends me a reading every single day. And so we'll talk about that reading, we'll engage about that, and then talk about my plan for the day. One of the most important for me, alone, is she does not let me focus on the future. Today I sent in my intentions for recovery today, because there are some days that I wake up and I don't want to do recovery. I don't want to work the program. Those are the days that I do more outreach and more service. Service is so, so, so important. And I'm just learning this. And service looks different for everybody. I read our invitation to you the other night. That's service on a meeting that I didn't want to be at. So, you know, they talk about when you white knuckle the program and when you fight it. It's not an easy program to work. You really have to surrender to a higher power. Step one, if I have to wrap everything up in a pretty bow, step one has been my answer to everything. To really, truly surrender and be honest with my sponsor, with myself, and that is my recovery, is complete honesty. I send her my food every single day. We don't have a food plan right now, because for me, in my experience, food is about emotion and food is about covering up feelings. So right now my abstinence kind of looks like, no, not kind of, my abstinence looks like I have to meditate for at least 5 minutes before I eat. And I have to eat off of a table. In my eating disorder, I ate a lot in my car. I would go to food after food place to get, let me back up. That wasn't words. Sorry. I used to go to multiple fast food places to get all of my binges. And it would be this dark routine. So abstinence is just to send in my intentions every day, to do some outreach, to go to a meeting and share. Because I have a really hard time with that. But on those days when I'm having a hard day, I realize that doing service is what helps me. One of the miracles I got from this program is the ability to say no. So growing up, I had a hard time saying no to people, and it put me in certain positions that allowed myself to be taken advantage of and put me in some pretty dangerous situations, but I couldn't say no. I just didn't have it in me, because I learned that saying no meant I got in trouble. So you're brain leads towards pleasure and away from pain. Like, it's just biological. So this program taught me to say no. and that no is a complete sentence. No, I'm not okay with doing this tonight. I need to wait on that. Or, you know, I'm sorry. No, I can't spend the week with your child. So one of the miracles of the program around saying no is that I got my dog. I was a teacher, like I shared. I had a 6-month-old. At the time, I was working with infants. And I had a 4-month-old whose parents were moving to Seattle. And they asked me if I could stay with the baby for the week while they went to search for houses. And of course, my instinct was, of course I will. Oh my gosh, I love this, my baby. They were also an in family, and so they grew up very much like mine. And I really connected, you know, with the baby. It was wonderful. But I thought about, do I really want to spend all day with this child and then go home with him by myself? And, you know, this wasn't, you know, a 1-year-old. This was a 4-month-old, or I think he was 3 months at the time. So I felt a little uneasy about it. And my mom was discouraging me from doing it. So I said, finally, you know what? I'm so sorry. I would love to spend time with him. I just, you know, and I have some other commitments, I said, which I did. And she said, no, we totally understand. You know, I can have my grandmother, his grandma, stay with him at night. But if you can help me just to bring him to school in the morning or to work with you and bring him home, we would appreciate that. And I said, of course, no problem at all. So saying no was okay. I was still going to do my job. It was going to be fine. Well, turns out grandma, who was staying with him, had to bring her dog along. And when I went there the first night, this was the first night I had met her. So we just connected and talked about the baby. And I had mentioned how precious her dog was and how my family and I had been looking for a dog for almost 1.5 years and just could never find the right one, or if they were too expensive, or whatever dog we tried to adopt just didn't work out for us. And I thought she was joking when she said, I said, oh my gosh, your dog is so precious. And I was like, we've been looking for a dog like her. Where did you find her? And she told me the story, and jokingly she said, want her? Do you want her? And I was like, yeah, I want her. Are you kidding? Of course, thinking that she was joking. So the next day, she asked me if I was serious about wanting to take her home. She said that she had been looking to rehome her for a while, but didn't find the right family. And she said that, you know, if her daughter-in-law trusts me to stay with her child for a week by themselves or by herself, then you were a good family and you were good people. So I talked to my mom about it. I talked to my parents, because I did still live at home at the time. And two days later, we brought her home. So I wanted to share just a really quick photo. That was the biggest miracle. As I have cannoli, her name is Cannoli. Because I have Cannoli now, we walk every single day. My program is better and better because of her. So I'll just show her a quick photo. This is her. She just got her service dog vest. One of the things that I have, you see, she's my absolute, my world. She makes me so happy in the morning. She makes me want to recover. She really inspires my journey. And you know, I had shared a little bit earlier, I've really used my art as a way to give my inner child a voice. And wow, it is 7:18. I have talked for so long. I am so sorry. I just want to share a quick piece of art and then I'll stop. So this is my first one. This is called The Fine Line. And this is basically the line between addiction and recovery, and how quickly it can happen, and how dramatic, you know, the difference is. This one, this is the piece that made me open up. So this is Beyond the Binge or Beneath the Binge. So at the base, basically, the root of my eating disorder is the anger that I feel. But on top of that, supposed to be waves of grief. Because the loss in my life has been the most contributing factor. And then up above that are tornadoes of just pain and abandonment and fear. Fear is a really big part of my journey that I'm working on. And through all of that chaos, there is clouds of anxiety because that is my baseline emotion. That is what I go to. All right. And then above the anxiety, there's the binge pillars because the binge pillars hold all of that down. So I detach from emotion when I binge. But our soul has a way of knowing when and how recovery is possible for us. And I just want to kind of wrap up and let you know that this program creates miracles. And this program is for everyone who is struggling to heal their relationship with food. I will always eat. I will always have to eat, but I can choose the way that I connect with food. And thank God for this program, because I am who I am today because of it. I hope that made sense. Thank you for letting me be here and share my story. And I apologize if it was choppy and all over the place. I am just so honored to be here and so thankful. And I hope that gave somebody hope. I don't know. I'm just going to stop there. Thank you.
Grazie, grazie, Dusi, bellissima, molte. Thank you so much. So we are down to just a few minutes. Maybe everybody, if you want to take 1 minute of sharing time, as you share your experience, Jeth and Hope, in OA, sorry. Sophia, if people may comment to your sharing, is that okay with you? As you experience, I'm sorry, as you share your experience,
definitely.
Please also share your hope. Please confine your sharing to your experience with the disease of compulsive eating, the solutions offered by OA, and your own recovery from the disease, rather than just the events of the week of the day. If you have any difficulties, share how you use the program to deal with them. If you need to talk about your difficulties more, seek solutions, please reach out to somebody after the meeting. You're invited to share and or feel free to pass. If you do not identify somebody with a problem with food, we ask that you do not share. Feedback, crosstalk, advice given are discouraged here. Crosstalk during an OA meeting is giving advice to others who have already shared, speaking directly to another person rather than to the group, and questioning or interrupting the person speaking at the time. Please keep your sharing. Let's just take a minute, I guess. Everybody's okay with that because we only have a few. And our lovely timer, can you please let us know when a minute is up? And we stop at 7:29. Anybody want to jump in?
Yeah, I'd love to jump in. This is Raina. Hi.
No.
Thank you so much. That was a beautiful share. I related to so much. I was 7 years old when my baby sister died. And that was tragedy in my own life. And I completely related to your story that way. Although my family reacted differently in some ways, but not in others. And I do believe in the healing power of creativity. I think it's really, really important for addicts in general and for me personally. Gosh, my minute is probably up. I don't know. But anyway, I'm walking my dog right now, who is also very special in my life and a part of my recovery. So that's why I'm a little out of breath. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else? I'll jump in. Again, thank you so much, Sophia. And you did a beautiful job. And I appreciate the clarity in not only recognizing that food was a coping skill, overeating was a coping skill, but also that you're beautifully clear on what helps you now, and that using art as an avenue to healing is beautiful. I relate to some of your story. In my family, food was a love language, and in recovery, I want to keep always, I came to peace with food still can be a love language. However, where there's a addiction, that means too much. And so I think food still can be beautiful. Somebody's sick, you make them a beautiful pot of soup or something like that, you know. But what I guess I deal with here is the imbalance and working towards making balance. And when I feel balanced, I feel peaceful. And that's to me what the idea of this whole recovery process is. One day at a time, like you said, that's what you started with. And that was my magic, my magic message when I got here. How am I going to give up sugar? I can't give up sugar. Well, you can one day at a time. You don't have to have it today. Wow. And it's like 31 years, no cane sugar, ever. Only by accident. And I usually know when it happens, I get a weird feeling. And then I'll say, oh my God, this has sugar in it. But usually there have been some mistakes, but very, very seldom. And once I find out, I just completely stop and I'll make an exception. And that's grace. Thank you, grace. So I'll pass. Anybody else?
Hi, I just really wanted to say thank you for sharing. I really appreciated your story. Yeah, I connected with the childhood part and then feeling sometimes being made to feel responsible for what you did as a child and how you acted. And then that realization that really you didn't have control over that. And like what a relief that is. But understanding how it's led you to where you are now. And yeah, also love art and dogs. It's like big major helpers. So yeah, thank you for your share.
Thank you, Sophia. So we have about a minute and a half left. If somebody wants to take that last portion, please go ahead.
My name is May. I'm a compulsive overeater. Sorry, I'm in and out somewhat because I'm supposed to call my sponsor by this time. And today is the first time my house being in MLS and suddenly a lot of showing. So it's a chaotic day, but because three things happening, like you said about when you don't feel like doing the program, you do the service and sponsorship. And I totally agree with that. So God has given me somebody that I didn't think I could help. It's because I was thinking by my own ability, my own volatility, my own vulnerability, but it's really not about that. So when I let all that go, and I just not putting any pressure on her or expectation, she end up like start texting me. I just say, don't give up and all that. And we start texting back and forth. Now she's going on to talk to me again by on her own pace. And it's the first time I help somebody this way. And I just want to say, Sophia, I heard a portion of your sharing. I apologize. I missed some of them. Really like your story. At one time, I felt like I want to cry, you know, when I heard your story, and I just very grateful. And I really usually never was this safe from relapse in a day like this. So I think it's the last 3 days accumulation. So I'm very grateful. Thank you. Thank you for sharing.
Thank you, May. It's so wonderful to have you here tonight. Okay, quick wrap up. It's been a wonderful meeting. Again, thank you everyone for coming here, making this sacred. And thank you, Sophia, with an F, Sophia Rose.